Hi, everyone. This is Lorenzo Anselmo from Omega Bond Watches.
And this is Luke Taggart from Bond Department.
And you're listening to the Blunt Instruments Podcast.
Guy, part two. You ready?
Part two.
Yep. Part two. So when we left off in part one, and I went back and listened to it for continuity purposes, my last question was, can Christopher McQuarrie come over and direct Bond? Now, before I let you dive into this, yours truly actually did some research, and I watched Ghost Protocol, Rogue Nation, Fallout, watched all three of those bad boys in the last like 3 days. Don't tell my boss. And so I just kind of wanted to see, you know, the direction. And don't get me wrong, we've talked about it. I've seen them. You know what I mean? But like this was like full on, put the phone down, watch, no distractions, nothing. Like
take him
out. Yeah, full on just me, put the dog in the crate. Shut up. I'm watching shit. So I, you know, because this whole thing stemmed from the, is Mission Impossible and is Tom Cruise doing Bond better than Bond? There's an argument for, is Tom Cruise doing it because of Top Gun, Mission Impossible, whatever he does, right? Then there's an argument, is Mission Impossible doing it? Because then you've got Christopher McQuarrie in there, you've got the cast, you've got Tom Cruise, whatever. I noticed some similarities between the two. Of course, there's going to be. But my first question to you for part two, is Christopher McQuarrie himself, now that they're basically done or almost done with Mission Impossible, like period, allegedly, would he ever get offered a Bond film? Would he take it? Those are my first two questions. Would he ever get offered it? And if he did, would he take it?
I mean, I think you have to at least throw a line out there if he's available. I mean, The 007 franchise is known for just grabbing the best of the best to do these films. I almost feel like it's almost a detriment to them sometimes, because you have all this like grade A talent. It's almost like an all-star game in sports. Like you have so much talent on the field that
it's like when kind of get lost basketball in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And then they still end up losing.
That, or like here's the example I'll use. It's you have so many big players on the table, like you look at it and you almost lose your leading man because everyone is just as equally great or almost as equally great as the person you're trying to,
if not better.
And then you run into the whole trouble of, well, now you're taking these other actors and you're giving them smaller roles than they're used to. And it's not pushing the main character up. You're dumbing down these great actors, and it just doesn't bode well that way. And I think if you look at a comparison at the Mission Impossible franchise, it's they have figured out how to have great actors, but make their roles a little bit more tailored to suit their
juicier
storyline.
Yeah.
Like,
let me ask you this. Do you think the director side of it applies? So, like, I get what you're saying, because when you think of Christoph Waltz and Rami Malek, a lot of people bitch that their roles weren't big enough or good enough for that caliber actor. But at the same time, it's like the phrase, no small parts. Like, any good actor will tell you, no, there is no thing as a small part. You know what I mean? You make it what you want to make it. And then the whole Glenn Powell thing with Top Gun, which I'm sure you've seen. He got offered Top Gun and turned it down. And then Tom Cruise called him and was like, why? And he was like, you know, I just don't think it's right for my career. Tom Cruise said, what kind of career do you want? He said, I want your career. And he's like, well, I don't it's not because I don't take small roles. It's because I make small roles great roles. So you can't give them shit for casting these people, which we're not. However, my new question is, take Spectre. So everybody knows Skyfall was incredible, 90-something percent of Rotten Tomatoes. Sam Mendes knocked it out of the park, whatever. Spectre is still a pretty well-received film critically, not as well as Casino or Skyfall or whatever. But if you look at Sam Mendes's resume, do you think Spectre is one of his better films?
No, I felt like he... Look, I'm a huge Spectre fan. I love that film. Mm-hmm. I love it. Even with its flaws, I love it because it's the true Bond equation. Mm-hmm. That film was basically built around Bond fandom.
Right.
And I think a casual watcher will watch that and just be like, what? Like, you know, like obviously like the storyline thing. And this goes back to what we talked about in the last episode about the people writing these scripts. Like, I don't think you completely roast them, but you're using the same writers for 9 movies. It's fucking time. Like, mm-hmm. it's time to kind of get some fresh blood in there. And I think that's what's working right now. And I think Tom Cruise has a very big hand in the direction of how he does his films right now. I mean, yep. whether it's in Mission Impossible or Top Gun or whatever he's been doing, Oblivion, these movies, Tom has a certain bar he has set for these films. And it's like, I'm not saying Daniel Craig doesn't have the same bar. What I'm saying is I have picked up on the things that Tom Cruise will take out and plug in. And if it's something that really, truly works, he doesn't take it out. He just mm-hmm. replaces the things that aren't working. So here's the example I'll use. Simon Pegg. He came on in Mission 3. Has mm-hmm. not come out. Why? Because he brings out a good side of the humor. And if you remember in that first film he did, he wasn't as funny as he was, but there was definitely chemistry between them. And Tom felt like it was enough to keep his character in the storyline and to build upon this. Like, now you got to think, Simon Pegg's had 4 films to develop his character in a small supporting role, but now Benji is like, you know, you have this expectation like Q is, but
co-lead.
Yeah. I mean, and now he's in the field. You're seeing this character develop. Q's mm-hmm. always Q.
Yeah.
Like, he's always the same person. And it's like, I mean, I guess you could say like Moneypenny kind of had more of a role, but then it like went, like, I liked the direction it was going, but then all of a sudden it got dumbed down again. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I almost felt like Naomi Harris was barely in No Time to Die.
She is.
I know. And yeah. yet in Skyfall, she was a huge, you know,
yeah,
huge presence on the screen. And so,
you've actually made a really good point that I've caught on to. And when you say Spectre is, would you say Spectre is the most Bondish Craig film of all of them? Like the most Bond formulated, sticking to the formula film?
If you look at all of Daniel Craig's 5 films, I think you can definitely say that one is the true formula.
Okay.
Versus, I mean, Casino is pretty close, but I still think when you're looking at it as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, and Casino was darker and, you know, it completely changed the tone. But I think consistency might be an issue then. Because from Rogue Nation to Fallout to whatever, Ghost Protocol and everything in between, they're all similar in the way where there's a mission. You know, they have their formula and they stick to it in every film, where there's a thing that exists being the Bond formula. And they reintroduce Craig with this like darker, grittier Bond. And then they make Quantum, which is still darker and grittier. And then Skyfall comes out and it's kind of somewhere in between. Then Spectre's kind of like more true to Bond. And then No Time to Die is kind of like back in between. So it's kind of like, not that there's an issue with it, but it's almost like the consistency of the feel and the formula of each Craig film kept changing. So it's like the audience didn't know what to expect, what the vibe was. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, you know what you're going to get if you go see a Mission Impossible. You know what I mean? It's going to be like crazy stunts, good storyline, good rapport, same squad. You know what I mean? Like, you're excited to see Luther. You're excited to see Benji, whoever, whatever it may be. You know that what's her face could pop in at any point in time. What's her name? Elsa? Yeah, what do they call her?
Yeah, Elsa Faust.
Elsa. You know, so it's like any of these things can happen at any point in time. And then it's like, you know, it's almost like when you make Casino Royale, should all the rest of the films been the same tone? And then would that have made more sense? And I think it's just whether you like them or not, that's obviously completely up to the viewer. But as far as what to expect, you know, because it's like if you see Casino Royale and a lot of, you know, Mads Mikkelsen's incredible, but he's not Rami Malek or Javier Bardem. Like, people don't know him as well as those two. It's like then when they cast one of those guys or Christoph Waltz and they're not doing what they did in Inglourious Basterds or No Country for Old Men, then you're like all disappointed. But you're like, you can't be disappointed because that's not what they're here to do. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's hard because they just, it seems like every part of the formula is interchangeable in the Craig series. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, if you really focus in on when you're saying that, I immediately start thinking about like the supporting cast. If you really focus in on these side characters and their role and their tone, like I'm literally, my brain is fixated on Ralph Fiennes, mm-hmm. like, and his progression from Skyfall to No Time to Die and his screen presence and his storyline and all that aspect of it. And if you think about it in Skyfall, like, he has this this very like conflicting role with Bond, and then turns out, you know, he's actually likes Bond, on his side, and supports him. And then in Spectre, it's like there's all this development of his character, as far as, you know, he's dealing with, you know, the shutdown, and, you know, he's still being firm with Bond, and he's not, it's the complete polar opposite of M. Mm-hmm. Like, he knows Bond is very skilled and he means a lot to the organization and they depend on him, but he knows that Bond's too cocky to know that, so he gives him the tough love kind of, you know, support. And then in No Time to Die, it's like this adversarial, which granted, over time, like, you know, Bond has left, he never came back and all this shit. So, you know, he's basically pissed at Bond, but it's just like, I don't know, the way their relationship was in No Time to Die and the lead up to it, it just seemed like, and granted, I feel like of all the allies, he had the most development other than Madeline, you know. Mm-hmm. Which, yeah. I don't really count her because she's a love interest. I'm talking like actual supporting, you know, allies, right? Like Tanner, Nomi. Well, Nomi's new, but I mean, Money, you know, Penny. Money, yeah. Penny, and all that. You know, so it's cute, just like, yeah. There is, you know, and their interactions with Bond are so limited.
Yeah,
you know, I don't want it to be like Scooby and the Gang. You know, like, mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. David Zariski has said that before, but. It's just one of those things where I know it's just a funny comment. I just feel like the tone of these characters is not fluid. It's very like sharp adjustments versus, like you said, like there's things you expect in the equation of Bond. And I think in Mission Impossible, it's more of like a plug and play type situation where it's like, okay, like let's remove this one off the table. And when something's mm-hmm. done, they're done with it. You know, there's no explanation. Like Jeremy Renner, just like poof, gone.
Right.
And it's like, there's no explanation. There's no whatever, but did it really matter? No, because
you're saying in the new one that's going to come out.
Yeah. Like, well, was he in the last one?
Mm-hmm. He's in Fallout. Yeah.
Like briefly, right? Like he's like an analyst.
Maybe he's not.
I don't think he's in Fallout, man. I think you're thinking of Rogue Nation.
Oh yeah, because I did just watch him like in a row. Yeah, maybe he's not.
I don't think he's in Fallout. Actually, I'm pretty
sure. Who's his like handler then? Oh, he never really has one, does he?
He talks to what's his face? God, this is terrible. I don't want to say that. I was going to say the guy that on the set, Alec Baldwin. Because remember, oh, he transitioned in Rogue Nation.
Yeah, he was the CIA. Yeah.
But
yeah.
See how there's like that like transition. Like they're like, okay, Jeremy Renner and him are together. You know, there's this continuity. He's like an antagonist almost to Hunt, and then it like transitions over to, okay, yeah, now he supports Hunt. There's this constant morphing of the characters like throughout, and you kind of see that from Skyfall to Spectre, mm-hmm, with M, but. I guess what I'm getting at is, in a roundabout way, is that I really feel like they need to stop being so like strict on the exact equation they're using, and they need to be more open to the idea of, I want to say just being more innovative and more like reactionary to like what's going on in the market, because I feel like this whole like dark tone went on way too long. Like, mm-hmm, it was like 2005, that was like totally the thing to be doing, but as movies have evolved, it's like, okay, like we're starting to kind of swing back to that like escapism kind of filming, which I'm starting to see with, yes, more and more films, yeah, and this whole like, oh, it's kill our leading guy off is kind of going away. I think honestly that's why Top Gun was so successful, is because it was a true like, hey, the good guy's gonna win in the end, this, you're gonna walk out of here feeling like you can like, you know, go,
yeah,
win the day, you know. So it's just, when I walk out of a Bond film, I want to feel like Bond saved the day, you know, or, yeah, Bond got the mission done, you know. And it's, I think there is an X factor here we're not talking about, and that, and I do want to get like your kind of opinion on this. Do you think that Tom Cruise's commitment to doing these stunts on, you know, or like his commitment to the style of these shots that are being filmed, does it affect the way they make a Bond film from a actual production standpoint?
I'd say so. I you know, I mean, you're never gonna really get someone who's as nuts as Tom Cruise is, but you know, I mean, that's one of the things where like I could say to you, Mission Impossible 2 is the one I probably know the most, just because that came out when I was starting to get in all this shit. And I remember the first Mission Impossible actually kind of scared the shit out of me. I don't know why. I just thought it was like, had this dark tone to it. I was like, there's some,
it definitely part. Did.
Yeah. Like when that guy gets shanked by the fence, like towards the beginning, that scares me. I don't know. Not anymore. But, and then I think Mission Impossible 3 has got kind of it's darker, you know, with Philip Seymour Hoffman's character is a terrible human being. But having watched these freshly, 4, 5, and 6, and knowing what he does, yeah, I mean, some of these shots are just like, this guy is nuts. And then you're watching it thinking like, I wonder if this is one of the only ones he didn't do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the helicopter chase scene in Fallout or whatever with Henry Cavill. You're like, yeah, I'm sure he's in the helicopter, but like the whole time, like, you know what I mean? Just certain things. You're like, this guy's nuts. And there's just shots that you see in those films that just, you know, are not fake, just physically impossible to look that real.
Yeah.
Unless it's real. But I mean, that's the thing, you just, that's exactly it. And it kind of ties into the Sam Mendes thing. It's like when you saw Skyfall, you got one type of film and you loved it. So then when everybody saw he was coming back for Spectre and then he's got Christoph Waltz, you're like, this is going to be bigger, better, whatever.
Yep.
Whether you like which one you like better, critically, Skyfall is the major winner, right? But it's like, then he goes into the Bond formula, and everybody's like, "Oh, what the hell? This is sucks." This is, well, it's like he made two different styles of movies back to back. Not that one better than the other, but you don't know what to expect. But it's like with a Tom Cruise film, we'll say Mission Impossible for the sake of this episode, you know, you're going to see him doing stunts. You're going to see this kind of story. You're going to see the familiar faces potentially out in the field. You'll introduce new characters that people are probably going to be excited about. You know, it's like, it's like when they cast Henry Cavill, the expectation isn't for him to come in and deliver some unbelievable performance. But when you cast Javier Bardem or Christoph Waltz, you can't help but expect No Country for Old Men or Inglourious Basterds. And not saying that it's a bad thing to expect that, but you kind of also can't, because when's the last time somebody got nominated for an Oscar for a Bond film? It just doesn't happen unless it's The Song, you know? So it's like, nobody has that expectation going into a Mission Impossible film, because that's not what it's supposed to be for, you know? And like, and I think, and Miles Teller said this in an interview, people forget just how good of an actor Tom Cruise is and the things that he did when he was younger, because he's become this action hero. But you forget like Rain Man and Color of Money and Jerry Maguire and all these, you know, dramatic roles. And it's like, but it's because you're so fixated on, you know exactly what Mission Impossible is supposed to be. You know exactly what that film is going to accomplish for you. Just like you said, when I left Top Gun, I literally was like going like 100 in my blazer. I didn't give a fuck if I got pulled over. I didn't care. I was like literally flying, shaved into a mustache, whole nine. When I left No Time to Die, I was hoping I was like ready to never leave my house again. Like truly, like who the fuck, and we don't need to go down that rabbit hole, but it's like after seeing Spectre. So it's like, it's kind of like a wave, right? Casino Royale sets one tone, Quantum's different. Then back up high with Skyfall, then probably even higher with Spectre, because it's even more Bondish and even more, you know, Pierce Brosnan-esque and Roger Moore-esque. There's all these different elements to it. And then way back down with No Time to Die. Mission Impossible just remains like a high brow, you know what I mean? Just like a intense but fun thing to go and watch, you know, and you know what you can expect.
Well,
I know that's a huge, long, drawn out answer, but
many
parts to it.
And here's the thing, is at the end of the day, there's one simple thing here that is the same. The director has stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
And the direction and the people influencing the direction of the film, they made a great film. And they kept the team together that made that great film, you know?
Right.
I think that there's...
Could you imagine if Phoebe Waller-Bridge didn't come in for No Time to Die?
I'm curious what it would look like.
Imagine how that would have been like a... Hey, if you're like not feeling happy with your life, come here. And now you're really going to hate your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So it just... I would like... to see, I would challenge them to really shake things up with this new actor and really decide what kind of tone they want to set. And I think instead of reacting to what everyone else is doing in the industry, I would love to see Bond go out and do its own thing. Like,
yeah,
don't worry about what Tom Cruise is doing. Don't worry, like, go make your own damn film. Go set your own damn tone.
Yeah.
Forget the past. Forget all the bullshit. Literally create Bond for this new decade of fans. Yeah.
Well, like, and remember,
and don't run from it.
Yeah.
And we talked about this.
Do you know what Fallout score is on Rotten Tomatoes?
I know it's in the 90s. I think it's like,
it's like a 97.
Yeah, I know. And this is the point I'm trying to make, is that these films are good, not just because of the stunts. Like, everyone wants to say, oh, it's the stunts, it's the stunts. I was like, no, it's really not the stunts. It's the stunts with the storytelling. It's the commitment to making... Look, Ethan Hunt, his character, we know that there's rules he won't break. Like, this is who he is. There's no question about his identity. And I feel like with Bond, in the last three films, we've had... almost like a low-key identity crisis with who Bond is or how Bond's being betrayed. Like, in one film, he's like this tired old man. There's nothing fun about Bond. There's no suaveness to Bond anymore.
Yeah.
I need Bond to be Bond. Like, I need him to be a stone-cold killer and then, you know, go woo someone, you know, after that. You know, it's like, that's the character. That's the role.
Yeah.
And there needs to be a commitment to keeping your character in character.
Yeah, I mean, here, listen to this. Rogue Nation, or Ghost Protocol, excuse me, Mission Impossible 4, 93. Mm-hmm. Rogue Nation, Mission Impossible 5, 94. Fallout, Mission Impossible 6, 97%. Top Gun Maverick, just for good measure, 97%. So it's like, there's a consistency in the critical score, there's a consistency in the story, in the plot, in the action, in the cast, in the director, in the overall direction. You know, like that's it. And not to like pat my own back here or whatever, but the amount of times we've discussed this shit, I don't know if it's ever hit me until today that as far as the direction of a Daniel Craig Bond film, there was no real direction. You know what I mean? And it's like, and yeah, we can shit on Die Another Day all day, but it still made a ton of money. You know what I mean? And it's like, so then when they switched it and they went to Casino Royale, they were like, oh, we'll go like a little more Bond or a little more Bourne-esque with darker and whatever. And then, but then they set a tone and they didn't stick with that tone. So you're starting to lose something. What, are you losing viewers? No. Are you losing money? No. Are you losing critical acclaim? Potentially. I mean, we saw it. He went from a 90-something with Casino Royale to, I think, low 70s for Quantum, and then way back to the 90s with Skyfall, and then into the 60s with Spectre, and then the 80s with No Time to Die. And don't get me wrong, I don't give a fuck about Rotten Tomatoes. You know that. But it's a good thing when you're trying to gauge something. It's a good talking point. It's just all up and down. The last three Tom Cruise films, all with Christopher McQuarrie, all high, mid to high 90s. It's just, they've got a formula and they've stuck to it, just like they used to do with Sean Connery or even Roger Moore. You know, they had an idea and they stuck with it. People knew exactly what they were going to get when they went there. And now you have no idea.
Tell me if you agree with this or don't. I feel like because of the writer's strike with Quantum, you're funny. I feel like with the writer's strike from Quantum that they panicked because of how that film went. I think they thought like it was going to be, you know, this like awesome sophomore season for Daniel on that film.
Yeah.
And then they had the strike and then they tried to push it through. And it was like, honestly, and I've said this and I'll say it again. I really wish they would have just like held on another year or so.
Mm-hmm.
Like, cause if it would have came out 4 years later, so that would have been 2010, that would have given them two extra years to kind of like really polish that one up.
Yeah.
They would have done, I other than it already being an amazing film, I think there would have been more there. That's the first thing. The second thing is I think they panicked and they were like, we need to go a completely different direction with this next film. And they're like, we need to abandon this story. They were like, you know, the whole Quantum thing there. I actually didn't mind it. I thought there was potential there. I just wish they would have kind of sussed it out a little more. Yeah. And then they got forced to, like, with Spectre, it's kind of like the whole shiny new toy kind of concept. Like, oh, we got Spectre back. It's like, let's make a film about it. It's like, mm-hmm. No, like show the discipline to make Quantum what you're doing with this and hold on to Spectre.
I mean, Spectre should have been new actor, never touched, in my opinion.
Yeah. So I think that's where that became more of a problem than people realize. And now when you're going to the drawing board, you're like, okay, well, we have to make this make sense. So now we have, you're already plugging things in that you don't necessarily need to use yet, or you should use, you're being forced to use them. Mm-hmm. So like the whole like tie between Spectre and Quantum like was just messy, and it's frustrating because, you know, I would love, like, when I look at Blofeld and I look at Spectre, I was expecting a Dark Knight Rises or a Dark Knight kind of situation. Right. I almost want Blofeld to be bigger than Bond because he's that level of villainous character to Bond. Almost have to focus more on Blofeld and let Bond shine through that naturally.
Yeah. Yeah. But, so another thing to your point too, with the Quantum thing, and I'll just throw this little tidbit in there. No Time to Die made every other Craig film a better film, in my opinion. Every single one. Quantum has grown on me exponentially. Spectre, similar to you, I always liked. It's just sartorially, it's so incredible that it's hard for me to not just like it for that. But another thing on the inconsistency route. So when Die Another Day came out, it made $47 million opening weekend. So when Casino Royale came out, so you got the new Bond, and of course people, we're going to go see it. It's Bond, but he's blonde and this, whatever. It made $40 million. Okay. So naturally it's going to go down because you've gotten rid of Pierce and whatever. But then Quantum came out and it jumped up to $67 million. But then Skyfall did $88 million in its opening weekend. And then Spectre dropped back down to $70 million. And then No Time to Die only did $55 million. So there's a huge inconsistency there. But then when you go over to Mission Impossible, you've got Mission Impossible 3 was $47 million. Rogue Nation was $55 million. And then Fallout was $60 million. Even Mission Impossible 2 was $57 million. Only Ghost Protocol, and actually, technically, you've got one at 60, one at 57, one at 55, one at 45, one at 47. Ghost Protocol only did 12.8. I'm not entirely sure why. Oh, they only opened it to 425 theaters, as opposed to your usual 3,600 and something. Mm-hmm. So it's like, even just like, you're getting the same people, you know, this, you know, your numbers are like within 5 to 10 million. Every time. Like, that's ridiculous. The consistency in every way. You know, it's like they just know what they're expecting. They're not like seeing a preview and thinking like, oh, this doesn't look good. Or they're not casting somebody thinking, oh, I don't know if I want to see this guy. You know what I mean? It's just like there's a shocking amount of consistency in everything that is Mission Impossible. Like, if I could say to Bond, one thing I think that they should learn is just a form of consistency, just throughout, through and through.
I don't even know if it's consistency. I think it's more of like a commitment to a tone. Like, right. I think that if you're going to start like this story arc, which, I mean, I feel like Bond's so old, like the way they portray Daniel Craig in Skyfall, he comes across so weathered.
Mm-hmm.
But then in Spectre, he feels younger. And right. And in No Time to Die, he feels old again. It was like, and I'm tired of this whole, oh, I'm quitting, I'm not quitting shit. Like, can Bond just be like suited, booted, there to do his goddamn job and fucking kill people for like, queen and country? Like, that's what I need. I need him go on a mission, get the job done, go investigate. Go, like, Tomorrow Never Dies. He's literally investigating something. He's full agent. There's no bullshit about, like, whether he's in or out. Like, I need a break from the whole, like, I'm ready to quit. You know? Like,
right.
That's so overplayed. I'm so done with that. Like, yeah. Let's get back to Bond being Bond. Let's take it for what it's worth, and let's bring him into the modern era of, like, espionage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are so many aspects to this that I feel like it almost feels like there's too much like circling the drain and not just going right to the point.
Right.
You know, like, oh, well, let's do this. Let's do this. Let's do this. And it becomes more of a drama than an adventure. You know, a Bond movie, when you walk into it, you should feel like you're escaping into an adventurous moment. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I want to walk out of the next Bond film and feel good.
Yeah.
When was the last time you walked out of a Bond film and you felt good? Like, you're like, holy shit, that was awesome.
Skyfall. Yeah, because I went and saw Skyfall like 8 times. Truly. And I would go see Top Gun 8 times.
Yeah.
You know, because, and to be completely honest with you, you know, and I hate to continue to bring up Top Gun because it was so damn good, but it's like, that was, in my opinion, the perfect film if you're looking for an action film. It had every aspect you could possibly want. And, you know, and don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to shit on Bond because that's why we're here.
Me either. But, I'm not trying to do that either, but I'm
like,
really.
But I've noticed similarities. Like, the whole end of Fallout outfit is like shot for shot remake of the Spectre outfit. At the end of Spectre. Do you notice that? It's like John Varvatos suede jacket, little mock neck. Black on black on black.
I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to say this. These spy franchises, they just steal from each other. Like, and it's okay. But it's like,
yeah. And that's the point I'm trying to make. Mission Impossible steals from Bond.
Of course.
And vice versa. Like, exactly. There's nothing wrong with that. We got to remember, Bond's the OG here. Yeah. So it's like, it doesn't mean you got to act like it all the time. Do some new shit. Don't kill Bond. make Bond the baddest person around, like he used to be. Like, how, this is my thing. How could you look at someone like Pierce Brosnan, tall, handsome, in shape, but not like jacked, and yet you still feel like if he's around, everything's okay. You know what I mean? And then in No Time to Die, you're just like waiting. Like, what, something's going to happen to this guy. Like, you shouldn't go to a Bond film thinking like James Bond's going to die. You never thought that in a Brosnan film. You know what I mean? Like, you, it's like watching like a TV series. Like, whenever Brianna and I watch that show Castle, like, I don't ever think that like Rick Castle's going to die if he gets like abducted, you know? But it's like now with like Craig, you never know. You never knew. You know, you're just like, something bad always happens to this guy. That's not why I'm here. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, even at the end of Fallout, like, he's sitting there talking to his actual wife, and then she like kind of leaves them, goes with off with the other guy, and then just Rebecca Ferguson swap. It's like, take one hot chick, move her ass, bring in another one. Day's still saved. He's still Tom Cruise. You know what I mean? But they're like, no, we're going to kill Bond. We're going to kill his wife. We're going to kill his girl. We're going to kill everybody. It's like, it's too damn dark, man. You know, like, what happened to only the bad guy being dark? And that's it. Remember those days?
This is true, man. I mean, it's like, and then there was something during No Time to Die where it didn't get much traction, but they were talking about how, like, oh, the villains in Bond films are always, you know, disfigured. And this is creating this mantra of how, you know, bad people have defects, or, you know, visually, you know, they're visually scarred. And it's like, seriously, like, what? I don't know. Like, I mean, look at Alec Trevelyan. Like, yeah, he was burned from the chemical factory, but it's just like, dude, there could be like Gustav Graves. Like, he's like the perfect, you know, British, mm-hmm. you know. So it's just like, maybe that's just in this storyline, this is their backstory. This is what made them upset, whatever.
Right.
I don't know. But it just becomes this huge stretch sometimes with, you know, people like really like just getting down to it. At the end of the day, it's a fucking movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's there to entertain you. There's nothing real about this, you know?
Well, and that's
either entertaining or it's not. Like, right. That's just literally what it comes down to. You're either a fan of what you see on the screen or you're not.
Right.
And when I walk into the theater, I want to feel good when I walk out, you know? Yeah.
Like, if you were to go, say Daniel Craig didn't do any Bond and this wasn't a Bond film, they just said this is an espionage film, and you went and saw No Time to Die, you might leave being like, that movie was unbelievably good. And you can be like, how in the hell did they make me feel all these different emotions in 2.5 hours? But because it's a Bond film and you have a certain expectation, it's not as good. You know what I mean? Because critically it did well. As a standalone film, it would have probably done even better. But because it's a Bond film, and like you said, David Zeritsky, he showed his whole family and he thought they were all going to love it. They all hated it. All hated it. Because they're, you know, he showed his mom or whoever. They were all thinking it was going to be one type of way, and it was something different. You know, if it was just like a standalone, like, spy film, maybe even like a period piece, and it just kind of had a very sad ending to it, you're like, damn, that was like, what a great, you know, the writing was incredible. What, you know what I mean? You can't do that though, because it's a Bond film. That's not the expectation.
And that's the thing, is like, they need to get away from the whole, like, oh, this is the expectation. So one of my favorite espionage films, not that critically acclaimed, is Allied. Love that film. And it mm-hmm. doesn't have a happy ending.
Right.
But you don't know you have no idea the direction of that film. And granted, like, they have the luxury of there's no history. Yeah. But if you're going to do dramatic, like, you got to commit to that's your tone. And mm-hmm. if that's what it's going to be, like, that's what it's going to be for this, quote, story arc. This is why doing a Bond story arc does not work, because you can't go back to the drawing board and reset. You can't go and say, okay, well, you know, this time around, you know, like, we're going to, like, have Bond jump out of an airplane in the beginning and he's just going to be in a good mood. Or, like, if you go to Timothy Dalton, like, in this one, he's going to, like, quit and, like, you know, go on his own. Like, you can't do that because you're so committed to this storyline of, and this timeline of history with the character. And I'm like, I almost feel like going back and doing one-offs might help versus the whole like, well, let's do a story arc, mm-hmm. you know? I don't know.
I agree with that. I would be pissed. That's the only reason I'm scared of potentially hiring Christopher Nolan. Because I'm assuming he'd want to do at least three. And he'd want to have some sort of story.
If you're going to commit to that, then that's fine. But you have to say, like, okay, this is who the director is for the next X amount of films. Like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
This is going to be three films.
But keep the bond. After that three-part story, then just go on to a new story. You don't have to replace the actor now. Because he's done three films and they were like one big story.
Yeah. I mean, just make it, you know... I think that we're kind of like touching on the same things over and over again. It's just, we want continuity, but we want it to, there to be consistency with the players that are involved.
Yeah. Have you seen All the Old Knives with Chris Pine on Amazon? It just came out like a couple months ago. It's him and Tandy Newton.
No. What is that about?
So that's an espionage movie. So they're both CIA.
What is it called?
All the Old Knives.
All the Old Knives. No, yeah, I never heard of it.
I think it's only like 2 hours long. And I won't give it away because I want you to watch it. But it's an espionage movie. It's got an Allied vibe to it. It's you know, it's more of a modern day thing. But basically, like, at the beginning of the film, there's like a hijacking. Mm-hmm. And the CIA is trying to figure out how this happened because they're just assuming there's like some sort of mole mm-hmm. within the CIA. And then fast forward however many years later, and most of that team is broken apart. And Chris Pine is still one of the only agents around, and he gets hired to investigate who the mole was. Mm-hmm. And basically the entire film takes place with him and Thandie Newton sitting at dinner together. And she's like recounting every second of that, like 1 month, 2 month time span. So it's kind of like them having a conversation, but then the actual film is like mostly flashbacks, but it's got a really good twist to it.
Hmm.
And it's like, you know, without spoiling it, it's got an Allied vibe to it. Like I said, kind of like a No Time to Die. It's not like riding off into the sunset shit at the end. But I didn't get pissed about it because it wasn't a Bond film. You know what I mean? It's like I was able to watch it for what it was. It's, you know, unbelievably long story short, you can tell a story like you did in No Time to Die. But I don't think there's any place for that in a Bond franchise or even a Mission Impossible franchise. But I don't think you'd ever see them do that in the Mission Impossible franchise. I don't think they're crazy enough to do some shit like that.
Yeah. I don't know.
I just keep thinking of Casino Royale. The ending of Casino Royale is how every Bond movie should end.
Yeah.
Like, you can't beat it. Spectre was close. And I'm talking the last scene. The last scene.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I'm right there with you on that one. For sure.
Yeah.
It's the like same with Skyfall.
Yeah, Skyfall, but like
great ending.
Yeah, with pleasure. You know, that was good. Spectre was a little better, and then Casino was like untouchable with that scene.
So let me ask you about this. So I was just thinking about this. Where's your meter at on the homage moments and the callbacks and all that shit?
Like No Time to Die stuff?
Like No Time to Die, Spectre, Skyfall, like where are you at with them doing that?
Well, if you look at it from a Bond standpoint, like, yeah, you like to see some of that stuff sometimes, mm-hmm. but Mission Impossible doesn't do it. And when Bond does it, if you're looking at it from like a comparison lens, I think it kind of dates it. I'll keep it at
how
that.
Many? Okay. So I was setting you up. Of secretly setting you up. Okay, how many callbacks are there in Casino Royale?
Mm.
I can only think of one right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, not very honest, many.
I can only think
shake of and not stir. Do I look like I give a damn? Does that count?
No, I was just gonna say the DB5.
Okay. I mean, that was the first thing I thought when you asked me the question. Yeah, I would say that. That's basically it.
Like, other than that, I mean. I did. I always thought it was weird that he had a P99 in mm-hmm. that film. I always thought that was strange, but
yeah,
it's not that big of a deal. But other than that, I just like the more I think about it, the more I'm like, wow, there's really not that many callbacks in that film. And then you go into Quantum And it's just like, other than the actual story itself with the, you know, undercooked writing in the third act, how many callbacks do you get in that film? PPK?
Yeah, even less.
Even less. So it's just, I don't know, like in my head, I'm like, I'm kind of tired of these, like, oh, let's remember this. Let's remember this. How about you guys just create a new moment? Like, so for me, like the whole Jack the Bulldog thing from Skyfall and that kind of moving forward, that was really cool because it was recalling a film in this story arc.
Yeah, 2 years later or 2 years earlier or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that was like for the people that are, you know, are involved with this aspect of the storyline. But it just felt like as each film kept going on, it was like more and more and more and more. And I'm like, okay, there's a rich history in Bond. Let's pick like two or three and then let's like get back to like making Bond, you know, this film, its own film. And I just felt like with No Time to Die, like just the four cars and two of them being used in the past. And I just felt like it was like, you should have done one or the other. It should have been either the Vantage or it should have been the DB5, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I've never really thought of that, but that's a great point. Honestly, I think it's a perfect spot to wrap it up, and I want to do it in a different way. So for the people listening, after you listen to this, message us. Message the Blunt Instruments account and let us know what you think about what we discussed. Do you agree with continuity, consistency, even what Lorenzo just said? Do you like the callbacks? Do you want more? Do you want less? Do you want an independent film or independent storyline on each film? Do you want a story arc? Let us know what you think. What do you think, guy? Yeah.
I love it. I think we can confidently say this is not just part two. This is going to be a trilogy. I think we're going to end this on like our listeners and what they think, and I want to really dive into some of these topics. You know, I want to get other perspectives, and I think we'll go through like what is said and just kind of like wrap this up in a bow, and that'll be our little trilogy of the Mission Impossible versus Bond kind of effects of the, you know, the new 007 that's on the way.
I like that.
Yeah, I love that.
Maybe we'll do some questions too. I'll have you put out a question related to this. I'll put out one. We'll compile them. And we'll answer everything that we get back and then kind of share some listener thoughts on everything that we've discussed.
Like that. All right. Well, Guy, this has been good as always, but thank you for listening. If you don't mind leaving us a review, that'd be nice. We haven't gotten one in a while, but I mean, I don't even know when we last got a review. Well,
I mean, there's literally a review. I'm like, these guys are great. And it flat out says Bond's apartment. So no shame here. No shame here.
All right, guys. Well, I'll catch you on the next one.
See you, buddy. Thanks, guys.